Before we begin, Simran and I would like to acknowledge that we're recording this on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nations. We'd also like to acknowledge that we met and grew up together on the land of the Combermary people of the Yugambeh language group. And we'd like to acknowledge and pay our respects to Wurundjeri and Combermary elders past and present, and extend that respect to any First Nations listeners.
Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Welcome back to Broadly Relevant.
I'm Simran Pasricha.
I'm Ryan Hamilton.
And this is the podcast for burnt out girlies
trying to stay broadly relevant.
Hey cutie.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm so good. I have a question for you.
Please.
If you could swap lives with any fictional character for a day, who would it be and what would you do?
It would be one of the Doctor's companions from Doctor Who.
Okay.
Maybe Donna Noble because Catherine Tate, bit of an icon. Or Amy Pond because her husband's hot.
Totally. That means absolutely nothing to me.
You've never watched Doctor Who, have you?
No, not once.
Great.
It wasn't my vibe.
Who would you be?
I would be Andy from The Devil Wears Prada. And I would break up with that boyfriend and I would fish that phone out of the fountain and I would stay with Miranda Priestly.
He'd stay in Paris.
Yeah. No.
Broadly fan mail.
Matt from Queensland says that Broadly Relevant is the only thing that gets him through the long drives he has to take to go to work.
So relatable. We love the M1.
Yeah. We love. Thanks so much for listening, Matt. We love you.
If you'd like to send us fan mail, just chuck us a DM or something. We love you. Bye.
Or leave a review. No, I'm leaving in the review bit. You have to leave it and don't cut it out.
Broadly culture. It's been, like, I would say a massive week. So much has been happening.
No,
but
totally.
I've got some highlights for you.
Okay, tell me.
Did you hear about the tea with Gina Rinehart?
Did I?
No, I love her. And I love that paintings are so culturally relevant right now.
Yeah.
So the short of it is that there is a portrait series that Vincent Namatjira, who is an Indigenous artist, did, which is currently on display at the National Gallery of Australia in Canberra. And he depicts a bunch of, like, powerful and influential and meaningful Australians, including Gina Rinehart. And the portrait is not a flattering portrait. And she got really sick of it and was like, oh my God, take it down, take it down, take it down. And so now everyone's been looking at it and sharing it. And honestly, that's a slay. And she's been really great because the National Gallery has absolutely not buckled. And they're like, of course we're not taking it down. You know, like Gina's, what is it, oil money? Rock money?
Mining.
Her mining money will not come against art. And I'm like, it's good for you, NGO.
Yeah.
But this is what Vincent Namatjira said. I paint the world as I see it. People don't have to like my paintings, but I hope they take the time to look and think, why has this Aboriginal bloke painted these powerful people? What is he trying to say? I paint people who are wealthy, powerful, or significant, people who have had an influence on this country and on me personally, whether directly or indirectly, whether for good or for bad.
Ooh, I was obsessed when I heard that. That was so good. He paints people as they are.
Well, yes, 100%. But did you hear the tea with all the Queensland swimmers?
No.
So it turns out, I didn't know this, she bankrolls a bunch of swimmers.
Yeah.
And not just like pays like Swimming Australia, like pays the swimmers, like funds the swimmers mm-hmm. to like live. I don't know, like a patron for the sports or whatever. So all the swimmers, without being asked, teamed up and sent a letter to the NGA saying, take it down. This doesn't reflect what we think of Gina. Because obviously that is a very, you know, gracious thing to support sporting people.
Sure.
And sporting people, actually, it's very hard to monetize the sports, just yeah. like the arts. But they were all like, that's not who she is. And I'm like, I in fact think it is what Miss Gina
yeah.
is like. But
no,
yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Do you want to know? I went to a uni where like all like the Olympic and like Commonwealth swimmers trained at.
Yeah.
And so we were like kind of like friends with like some of them. And like I had a friend who was like housemates with like some of them. And so we used to go to like all these parties with these like Queensland swimmers. Can I tell you? All the worst. All the absolute worst. I hate you all. Sorry.
No,
you're probably,
that makes sense.
You're probably not the same swimmers and like maybe you're really all lovely. But like,
I do have to say,
yeah.
I feel like they're, because a lot of people are like, no, yeah, she's ugly. And I'm like, totally. I think there's an element of fat phobia to everyone ganging mm-hmm. up on Gina.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any thoughts on it. But I'm just like, interesting.
Noted.
Because you know how like everyone like critiqued Trump and the first thing they'd critique is his fatness and then his fascism?
Yeah.
There's an element of that here. Like, let's critique her bank account and then not critique her body at all because we shouldn't critique people's bodies.
No, and that's correct. Yeah.
Although slay to Vincent for painting the world as he sees it.
Yeah.
Vincent Van Gogh could never.
So other things happening in culture. So I have been obsessed with this drama that's happening on TikTok. And it's not drama because it's entirely made up. And I love made up drama. That's my favorite genre,
surreal.
I would say. Low stakes. And it's basically between these creators called Ayame, Yuval, and Oliver. And Ayame is, like, just a great creator. She's, like, so funny. She does a lot of, like, reviewing of those, like, ASMR videos.
Yeah, you know, I love her.
Love her. And she has, like, this funny bit with the creator, Yuval. Basically, Ayame goes to, like, hotels and, like, travels a lot for, like, her work. And so she'll say, come find me, basically. And Yuval will go to the ends of the earth to find him. So it can give like a little bit from like that guy off of like that show You, Joe. And so it could be creepy, but it's completely consensual because Ayame is like, literally come find me. And it's like the sexual tension between that is like incredible. It's my favorite thing to watch on the platform. Incoming, there is Oliver. He was a guy who got the 22 hat at Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
And so he
also... Heterosexual.
Yes. You're sad about it. Men in hats, right? Yeah. Anyways, he is friends with Ayame and does like a couple of videos with her. And so he comes out and he's like, you know what? I have beef with Yuval, but he says, I have something that Yuval does not have. I have time spent with Ayame, and goes on this like full Bridgerton-esque speech. He's like, time without these cameras and social media. And so Yuval, I know what it is to look that woman in the eye, to be completely leveled by her glance, a glance I fear that you would not survive. I know what it is to make her laugh, to make her smile. And then he's like, you know what? Come find me. Don't worry about it. You're more than welcome. And he's like, actually, I'll come pick you up from the airport. And so now it's turned from like Bridgerton to like challenges, and I am obsessed.
No, that sounds hot.
And the next inkling of this is that Yuval did find him and has sent a package to his house in New Zealand. Everybody knows I'm not doxing him. he's in New Zealand. But yeah, I was like, oh my God, I'm obsessed with this. And I love made up like drama and random things like on the internet and like, you know, like made up like musicals on the internet. Like it's just my
No, but like
favorite.
I do want to see the challenges remake now.
Absolutely, starring Ayame, Yuval, and Oliver. I'm here for that. Absolutely.
Oh,
so that's just something that brought me joy, and I highly recommend everybody look into that. Also, lovely to see so many people of color in a love triangle. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a slay. Do you want to hear a not slay?
Oh, yeah. Tell me.
Do you know OpenAI of ChatGPT fame?
Yeah.
You've used?
Yeah, I've dabbled.
Sam Altman, who is the homosexual CEO of OpenAI. That's not relevant, but I'm painting a picture.
Yeah.
He wanted a voice for the new, they dropped some fucking new thing with a voice or whatever. I don't care. It's AI. Fuck it. But they wanted a voice, right? And so Sam Altman asked Scarlett Johansson to voice. Now, because there was that 2013 movie Her, which Scarlett Johansson was in, where she voiced an AI, right? Sam Altman clearly didn't get the meaning of the movie and was like, we need her to voice our AI. He tweets the only word, her. Like mid-2023, presumably when he's in talks with her. She says no. He then goes and gets a voice actress to mimic her voice perfectly. And then they just release it without her permission. And then she circles back and she's like, what do you mean? You can't just do that. And so now they're in like massive legal trouble with Scarlett Johansson for like trying to like mimic her voice. And it's like a whole bunch of tea. And I'm like, Sam Altman, homosexual queen, perhaps you shouldn't have.
No, perhaps you shouldn't have, Diva. Because like, that's an insane thing to do.
And also he's trying to deny it. He's like, no, we just like found the right voice for the job. And I'm like, so why did you tweet her in 2023? Yeah. Just
her. Yeah, no, literally. And also, like, to go to Scarlett Johansson and then to be rejected and then to just do it anyways. And they still go forth. But now it's a different voice, right? Is that correct? Because Scarlett's, yeah, like, so suing them?
I think they pulled it and there's some sort of, like, big drama hullabaloo. And my favorite take, which I saw on Threads over the weekend, is, like, there's so much drama with, like, AI and it's stealing jobs from creators. So, like, you know, you should probably try and make yourself at least try to connect with culture creators in an ethical way. And then just completely fucked it up the noggin. And I'm like, what are you doing, Diva?
No,
what are you doing?
It's so embarrassing.
Literally.
And, like, very problematic also.
And honestly, OpenAI is so embarrassing. Like, they've had some major drama.
Yeah, tea.
Broadly news. Lots happening in the news as well. Let's keep talking about the internet, okay?
Okay.
Because I love the internet. So... Social media is a thing that exists, and currently I think the law is, like, you have to be 13 to use social media. Mm-hmm. Not that I personally followed that law when I got Facebook in 2009 in Canada.
I did. I waited till I was 16 because my parents didn't allow me and I was scared of authority.
But there's a major push in Australia now to raise that age, mm-hmm, to 16. Mm-hmm. So maybe you're ahead of the trend.
Oh, totally.
But it's all a little bit messy, and let's talk, yeah, about it. First, I'm going to start with the tea that is why I wanted to bring this up in the first place. I read an article from the ABC, and it said, Queensland Chief Health Officer declares public health alert over mental well-being of teenagers. And the thing that interested me was the Queensland Chief Health Officer, because we have a mutual friend who connects us to the...
Oh,
you
totally
know this, right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, what's he said? And basically he's like, oh yeah, social media is, like, really detrimental to teens, etc., yada, yada, yada. Queensland is recommending that you limit until they're 14. And I was like, okay, gotcha, cool. And so then I was, like, reading some other news. And guess what News Corp is doing at the moment?
What are they doing?
They are running a campaign, and it is called Let Them Be Kids. And it's a specific campaign where they're, like, running, like, specific stories. They're having a petition. They're petitioning the government to raise the age that you can get on social media to 16. Which, like, slay, sure, protect the kids. It's hard not to read it as, like, a cynical take from News Corp after Meta has stopped paying them for them to turn around and say,
absolutely,
let us use our power in Australian society to just fuck you over with the youth. Not that I necessarily think the youth should be on social media, although I didn't mind it. Mm.
But it's
a little cynical.
No, absolutely. And I will never deny that, like, social media does play a factor into, like, you know, mental health issues and,
totally,
you know, like, it definitely warps your world in a way, but it also aids and, like, grows your world at the same time.
Yeah, hundo.
But I'm kind of sick of this rhetoric of, like, blaming the phones for everything, you know?
Yeah.
It's a similar sentiment of, like, we talked about a couple weeks ago about, like, the porn passport trials.
Mm.
Like, this, again, there's always a get around for this situation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You'll just fake your age, like, as everybody does. So I think it's the education and it's the legislation around the phones that needs to be, you know, amped up by the government.
100%.
Yeah.
Like, should I, as an 11-year-old, have been on Facebook?
No.
Probably not. Did anything bad happen to me?
You have to think about this one.
Not on Facebook. Wait.
Oh, okay.
Wait. No, Ask.fm. That was the real...
No, Ask.fm was crazy.
We should not have been on Ask.fm.
No. And there is, that, like, something, that's something I've really been thinking about. But there is, like, a reiteration of Ask.fm in every generation, I've realized. Because in Snapchat, like, that similar, like, anonymous questions things that you could do. And then we had Ask.fm. And then apparently before it was, like, Friendster or something. I don't know.
Ancient times.
I don't know. But, yeah... The, like, obsession with...
Anonymous questions?
Anonymous questions, anonymous bullying is crazy.
We should set up, like, an anonymous message line to Broadly Relevant.
Oh, true. A hotline.
No, I'm into that.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, great. What would you
let's
ask?
Let's do it on Ask.fm.
Bring Ask.fm back. I love that you say ask.fm. .fm. Like,
what did you call it?
I say Ask.fm.
Oh. So real.
So we're fighting.
Okay. Okay, but so then the craziest here, right? So obviously, like, Dr. John Gerard, the Queensland Chief Health Officer, is off, like, teens shouldn't use social media. And then News Corp is like, teens shouldn't use social media. They should just read News Corp. And then guess who else weighed in?
Who?
Albo. And his hot take was teens also shouldn't use social media, which...
Great guess.
Again, like a fine enough take, but it's like, okay, how are we legislating this? How are we doing age verifications? Like, are we ruining the open web? Like, what does privacy look like in the 21st century? You know, et cetera, yada, yada, yada. It's a complicated issue.
All of the above. All of the above. I just remember when we were like learning, I think this, our grade maybe was like sort of that first kind of cohort to go through digital, what would you call it?
Literacy.
Yeah, digital literacy. And we used to like call in this guy called Paul Dillon. That's like a very niche thing. Niche, like, no, Australian thing.
I still follow him on Insta.
But he was basically this guy who would go around to different schools talking about like how to remain safe online and also, you know, like with like drugs and alcohol, like he would like have a talk basically. And I remember my parents coming back from a parent Paul Dillon talk.
Oh my God.
And like I must have been like grade 7 or 8 maybe. And they were freaking out. They were like, we have to take all your phones away from you. Like, you're not allowed on the internet ever again, basically. Like, you're going to, like, speak to a pedophile. And I was like, oh, totally, 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 totally. So he ruined my life. But at the same time, we did know a friend who actually spoke to, like, someone who was, like, 30. So I guess, like, they've got a point. Like, the internet is a scary place.
Yeah, I don't know what the right answer is. But then I'm like, I feel like if you just, like, hand a 16-year-old Instagram and they've never used it before.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's something to be said for the fact that, like, because I didn't start posting until I was 16, but I was certainly consuming before, or probably didn't start posting until I was 15 or something.
But maybe that could be like a nice like boundary, maybe. You know, like you can consume, but you can't post basically.
Well, yeah, because I'm like, YouTube for kids absolutely exists.
Right.
And like that like goes down to like, I don't know, baby?
Yeah.
Because there's like...
Cocomelon.
Cocomelon.
The Cocomelon kids and the iPad kids love YouTube kids.
And like, I think there is something to be said about like digital literacy, like, you know, in order to be able to write, you do have to learn to read.
Work.
You know?
Like, yeah, that really, I really need to think about that one.
To make an Insta post, you gotta read an Insta, you gotta see an Insta post.
Totally.
You know? Because, yeah, I think if you threw me into the deep end, that would be insane.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I like, because we all had to go through that embarrassing phase, I guess, of like learning Instagram, because we were the generation to
not all
Instagram.
Of us have archived that, though.
Call me out. Don't dox me.
I actually recently did like just go through and like your old photos. Do you remember?
I know. And that was literally crazy of you. People used to do that in like on Facebook were like maybe your biggest enemies in life.
Well, that was digital activism on my behalf because I was like, I hope someone archives these.
No, and I will never. I gotta stay true to my roots. All right. People need to know where I came from.
So true.
So true.
But yeah. Well, do you want to know what like other law stuff is happening in the world?
Yes, tell me.
You've heard of the International Criminal Court?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've issued an arrest warrant for Benjamin Netanyahu and the head of defense in Israel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed they have.
But yeah, and so they've also issued arrest warrants for 3 senior Hamas leaders, and both Israel and Hamas officials have condemned the move, which makes sense. I don't think you wouldn't. Actually, let me just clarify. So they haven't issued the arrest warrants. They've announced that they're now seeking arrest warrants, and that will be assessed by 3 judges before a decision is made on granting their requests.
Mm-hmm.
So we're making moves, you know?
Yeah,
we're
absolutely
getting close.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The ICC has come under attack for this announcement already from a lot of different critics, including Joe Biden. Basically, the whole shtick is that the ICC has, like, no jurisdiction here and that they think it's, like, anti-Semitic and that it creates a false equivalence between Israeli officials and Hamas by seeking warrants for the latter at the same time.
Yeah,
which is a lot of bull, if I do have to say so myself, because the ICC does have jurisdiction here, because Palestine is a party to the Rome Statute that created the court in the first place. And as many have already pointed out, we didn't hear any of this like legal, you know, like hair splitting when the Western world and like the ICC went after Ukraine last year. Okay. You can't pick and choose every time. And they seem to whenever it involves brown people.
But you know who isn't party to the Rome Statute?
Who?
America.
Mm.
Which is a bit of tea. Like, America is the shady lady.
Yeah.
Like, she can do no right.
No, literally. And and she keeps throwing shade consistently. Joe Biden was like, oh, no, this is a terrible thing for the ICC to do. And they're just... And with people saying that it's, like, you shouldn't, like, put Israel and Hamas as, like, the same, right? And people getting annoyed at that. Yeah. I was like, okay, that's simply... That's not what we're doing. And I think Branko Marcetic on Jacobin said it best. He says that this charge is, like, a very silly one because the idea that indicting Israel and Hamas at the same time is a statement of equivalence is nonsensical, as saying that if officers arrest a serial killer as well as someone responsible for a hit and run on the same day, the police are making a statement that those crimes are fundamentally the same. And it's not, right?
Yeah.
Like, and like, that's an insane take to say that like they're the same thing, basically. And it's, in fact, it's the opposite. By targeting both Israel and Hamas, the ICC is proving that it's committed to taking an even-handed application of international law. And then he says, oh, and this is the most shady thing, which is great. But it's true that the two aren't equivalent. While Hamas' monstrous rampage killed 767 Israeli civilians, the Israeli government has so far slaughtered at least 16,000 Palestinian civilians by Netanyahu's own self-serving count, which is obviously lower than the actual amount of civilian deaths. Yeah.
What does it actually mean, though, like if an arrest warrant was issued?
Unfortunately, the worst that can happen is kind of like a slap on the diplomatic wrist. So, like, essentially, it allows if Netanyahu, like, goes into anybody, like, any of these, like, states, like, territories, they're allowed to arrest him, basically.
Yeah, which includes Australia.
Yeah, which includes Australia. So if he comes on over here...
A little holiday to Queensland.
You're done. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that shits me is, like, yeah, totally, Netanyahu's a bad guy.
Well, yeah.
Like, he is.
What do you have to say after that?
But I think also it's like, you know, sure, if we cut Netanyahu, it's like someone else will step up to the ball game and we should just stop playing the ball game.
Yeah.
You know
what
I mean?
That's true.
It's like Zion, yes, 100% arrest him, but it's like, be so for real, someone will replace him and someone will continue it. Mm-hmm. Like, Zionism needs to be erased.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's like one thing out of like 100 different things that need to be done. You know?
Yeah. Intifada revolution.
Absolutely. And I hope that the ICC continues to hold Israel to account.
Manifesting, yeah.
Manifesting a free Palestine.
But also ICC, like, that's, you know, like, one avenue of potential justice, you know? Like, also, yeah.
Justice for Amal Clooney, though.
Justice for Amal.
In all of that. People are really hating on her for not saying anything about, like, free Palestine. But in actual fact, she was working on this. Like,
yeah.
She was part of the team.
No, 100%. 100%. Yeah. And, like, there are certain roles where you do have to perform neutrality in order to enact justice.
Ooh, I love that. I want to eat that up.
Broadly deep.
If that was any clue to you, we're talking about fashion, baby.
You better work.
Yes. We are talking about fashion, but in the lens of politics.
Yeah.
So Australian Fashion Week happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of complaints.
And it was a fatphobic fuckfest.
Well, yeah, the usual.
But what else was it?
It was problematic.
Free Palestine?
Free Palestine. And a lot of people noticed that, you know, there were keffiyehs that were worn during Australian Fashion Week, but they weren't picked up by the mainstream galleries or influencers or publications. Like, you know, a lot of people did, like, what are you wearing today, like, videos or, you know, streetwear videos, that sort of thing. And none of them highlighted keffiyehs. It was maybe like three videos that did so on personal accounts. There was one modest label who took to the runway, which was amazing, called Asiyam. And the designer came out in a keffiyeh. There were like many creators who went there who also wore the keffiyeh and, like, you know, models who also wore the keffiyeh. That was like amazing to see, because I think that, and many people think, that fashion is inherently political, I would say.
Yeah.
Right? Because, let me tell you why. What did I have to say? It's always been this sort of like signifier of socioeconomic and socio-political times, Like, you can take it back, like, all the way to, like, ancient Egypt, where, you know, people wore different garments to differentiate between different classes. There were, like, you know, suffragette sashes were used as a symbol of feminist liberation. Even in, like, in the 60s, like, the counterculture movement, people were using, like, psychedelics and, like, tie-dye patterns and bell-bottom, like, jeans to kind of, like, serve of these, like, powerful symbols of rebellion and liberation because they were so different to, like, the normal, like, dress at the time.
And also, like, the way that, like, fashion is used is, like, a way to, like, code yourself as queer and, like, mm-hmm. connect across queer subcultures. You know, like, I'm thinking of the hanky coat, but also, like, in punk subcultures, like, lace coat. Yeah, I'm thinking of lace coat. Actually, can I tell you a story? I had to buy laces the other day, and yeah. I bought them from Timberland because I just bought the default ones. And I don't own Doc Martens. Mm-hmm. I own Timberlands, but they're black, so I get stressed that people perceive them as laces. And then I was like, fuck, what do yellow laces mean? Apparently they mean anti-racist, so.
Oh, tea. Okay, so real.
But I once tried to buy pink laces to match my hair, but then they arrived and they were too red, and I was like, fuck, I can't wear them, because you know what red means?
No.
Nazi.
Rats.
Rats, literally. Yeah.
No, literally.
Fashion.
No, so it's not like a new concept, right? And I feel like the more we try to like shy away from the fact that fashion is political, the more problematic it is.
I think it's ridiculous when we try and pretend that anything is apolitical. Mm-hmm. Like,
including us.
Like that quote from Second Wave Feminism, the personal is political. Like everything we do is bound up together, you know, the way I dress, the way you dress, the way we carry ourselves. Yeah, it's politics.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had this friend like ask me to borrow a sari. And
okay.
He was a white friend. And I was like, you know, when it comes to like actual like cultural events, I'm like, yeah, totally. Like if like I wouldn't expect someone to like buy a full ass like Indian outfit if they're only gonna be using it once. Ryan has. I invited him to my Diwali party and he so got ripped off.
I've now used it twice. So.
No, absolutely. At my second Diwali party. Which I love. We love an ally.
I'll bring it out next year.
Yeah, absolutely. He's like, he's collecting clothing items for my wedding, and I love to see it. The sustainable king.
Maggie, where are you?
Yeah. Yeah, so anyways, I did feel a type of way because it wasn't for a cultural event. They kind of just like wanted to like wear it on a night out, and we were like all going, and so it was just like, you know, we were all sharing clothes, and I'm a big believer in sharing clothes, you know, but this is kind of like where I draw the line, I would say, because to, I guess, remove like the cultural significance and therefore like the political significance 100%. From a piece of clothing is not possible in a way. And I talked to like my other like Desi like brown friend about it, and I was like, is this weird? Like, I can't tell. Like, it's not like a bad thing per se, but like, and she was like, oh, at the end of the day, it's like a piece of clothing. And I was like, I don't think so.
No, it's more than that.
And I think a person who really like gets like what I'm trying to say is Christina, and she has a Substack called Consuming Substack, which I highly recommend. It like just came out. So basically she says that she's not saying that you need like a deep meaning behind every item that you own, right? And you can't, and it's not like that you can't like indulge in fashion for like fashion's sake and like have fun with it. But she says, we live in a different world where the commercialization and industrialization of fashion has impaired our capacity to consume it as an art or a form of genuine communication. And I think that communication part is like the most important in this piece. But those that do it for the art really care about it because they appreciate fashion and beauty as tools we use to craft and care for and adorn our lives. We should not shun this, and it is why occasions like the Met Gala are important to fundraise and support those lucky enough to pursue and discover this passion. But such events are empty without addressing the problems in the wider context of the world. And so my friend basically asking for this sari kind of like divorces my cultural lineage and identity and things that like I've fought to be able to like represent myself freely in this white world, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think the fact that like she's not taking this context into consideration and now has like put the burden on me to explain it to her and like to is you know even more like problematic you know
hundo.
And I'm all it's a hard medium because it's like obviously like you want to be some everyone has to like learn from somewhere, right? But I hate that it has to be from me and something that is so personal, you know? Someone that I think is doing a really good job this week at understanding like significance of fashion in the political sphere is Cate Blanchett.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. So she went to Cannes Film Festival, which was rumored to basically have banned any symbol of like Free Palestine or like political symbol on like their red carpet.
Which is so fucked.
So fucked. Like so fucked. Especially because it's a place where like people come out, like they show out with their outfits, right? But Miss Cate Blanchett, she said, "Don't worry, girl. I got it. I've got you. Don't worry about it." And basically, she is wearing a beautiful dress by Jean-Paul Gaultier, which is designed by Haider Ackermann. And it is a dress that is like a black dress, basically. It's a very simple black dress. But then she lifts the train and you can see green and then like it's white on the back of the dress. And the contrast with the red carpet makes the Palestinian flag.
Actually fucking brilliant.
It's insane. It's so good. It's such a smart way to go about it. And it just shows that like you can really use any platform to speak out against injustice if you are creative enough and you are willing to do the work, you know? And
100%.
I think that's a slay for Cate.
A slay for Cate. A serve even.
Ew. Yeah. Any thoughts?
No notes. Although, here's a question. How do you feel about all those, like, ceasefire pins that all the celebrities wear? Like, Nicola Colin.
Yeah.
Is that her name? Colin? How do you pronounce it?
Coughlin? I hope it's not Colin.
That diva Nicola. she's been wearing her badge everywhere.
Yes.
How do you feel about the badges?
Yeah. Look, I find it interesting that it's like the artist for ceasefire pin as opposed to like a Free Palestine pin. Like that is something that I have clocked.
No. And I'm like, why do we have to hide behind like these organizations? And what was that one last week? The Project Olive or something?
Project Olive Branch. Yeah.
I'm like, why do we have to call it other things? Like, why can't we just say ceasefire?
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
Or just say Free Palestine, you know? Yeah. Or just say Intifada Revolution.
Work. Reality.
No, I do get why we can't say it. Yeah. I 100% do get it. But also, let's normalize just saying it.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, can I give you some tea from the Australian theatre scene from November? So it is cold tea.
Piping on tea.
So there's a play called The Visitors, which premiered at Sydney Theatre Company, which tells the story of the First Fleet arriving in Botany Bay on Gadigal Country. And after the show every night, the performers, who were all Indigenous, got up and had a little speech about Palestine. This was in November, mind you, right? Pulled out their kafirs during the bows and, like, you know, called for ceasefire, as they should. People commented on it. Not much happened. Literally the next show they did after that, right? The Seagull, which is a Chekhov play. It's boring, whatever. Three actors pulled out kafirs as well during the curtain call, right? And this is not an Indigenous play. It's by, like, an old Russian guy.
Mm-hmm.
Massive uproar with, like, Jewish funders on board members on the Sydney Theatre Company board, like pulling funding, like threatening to pull funding, like massive uproar. And I find it interesting that like when the Indigenous artists called for ceasefire, nothing.
Mm.
But suddenly white people do it in like a white coded performance and suddenly it's uproarious. I found that really interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that's
so wild. Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's tangential to what we're discussing, but I do find it interesting how who says what changes meaning.
Mm.
Positionality, eh?
Yeah.
You heard of it?
No, absolutely. And I think fashion is a really... It is interesting to see Cate Blanchett get, like, so much credit.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a bigger stage, right?
Yeah, 100%. Sure.
Yeah. And, like, I get it. And, like, so great that she did that, girly.
Yes.
But, you know, if a brown...
Yeah.
If a brown actress, or 100%. You know, I wonder what the reaction would be.
100%.
Would it be Canner from like Cannes, you know?
Sorry, but yeah, I think it like points to like a lot of hypocrisy, and it's like, why do we elevate white people's voices over voices of color?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
That's my take.
Yeah, it's interesting. I am loving seeing everybody like in the kafirs, though. Like, I think that is in our generation, sort of like the most like forefront version of using fashion in a political manner, right? Like seeing people like adorn it in their university graduations, at work even, I've seen a lot of people like say like, how do I incorporate my politics in my corporate outfits, you know? And I'm obsessed with those videos. And it's kind of nice because it goes away from the notion that like fashion can only be like a tool that is for like the wealthy and like the famous, you know, and you can do it every day. Yeah. And I think that, like, this is a really good example of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the tea. I will say though, I myself have been like guilty of being like fashion and arts isn't as vital in the fight for justice, I would say. I have been guilty of saying like that it actually, like, why are we putting so much attention on that as opposed to, you know, like grassroots work, I guess, you know? But researching into this has made me change my mind. Yeah.
So the climate change is bad.
yeah.
And there's been a lot of art made about climate. And there was this play that I saw. It was called Whale in 2019 by Flora Kilpatrick. It was kind of about, you know, how islands like Tuvalu, Samoa, Vanuatu, they're sinking. Well, they're not sinking. The oceans are rising, which sinks. You know how rising sea levels work.
Yeah, I do.
And it was kind of talking about like that as an issue and why we being Western audiences don't really care and don't have any sympathy for those people. And there was an interview which I still think about and still reference quite a lot, where someone essentially asked her, like, what's the point, Fleur, of making art about this? Like, you know, the people who are going to see this show already agree. Like, you know, yeah, you're going to get 75 people in at Northcote Town Hall and they're all going to be like lefties who already agree with you. Like, what's the point? What can you offer? Like, why? Why should we, as theater artists, more specifically what I am, expend effort telling these stories and offering them? And she said something really profound, and I'm going to get the quote. It took me a while to start writing about climate change. It was so big and frightening that I didn't know how to respond and what a playwright could possibly offer. There's always the question of, am I preaching to the choir? It took me years to realize that the choir needs support, rallying, and to be told that they are powerful. And I think, yeah, we do need to support each other. And art making, storytelling, you know, theater, fashion can support each other. Like, when I see someone wearing a keffiyeh, I'm like, work, intifada revolution, you know. And like, it nourishes us to know that we're not alone. And I think in isolation, we lose our power. But when we like team up, we can achieve things. And art can help us feel more connected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. I agree with you.
Oh my God, rebuttal? Yeah.
I agree with you. My qualm is like, what's the point of being connected if we're not alive?
What do you mean?
Like, it's all fun and great to be connected, but if I'm starving, then like, I don't care about connection. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
So I'm like, and I know that both things can like exist, like both like plights can exist and like help and aid each other. I think maybe I just have like personal guilt that I'm not using my time on this planet
and doing enough.
Yeah. Because I have a career in the arts, essentially. That's not what I set out to do. And like every year I have a crisis. I'm like, oh, should I do law?
No.
So that I can, you know, so I can like make a greater impact, basically.
But
you know?
I think, I don't want to say it, but it sounds like internalized capitalism.
Yeah, that's fair.
Which is so fair. But it's like, you know, thinking like that, like, and I've been guilty of this too, 100%. But like, I'm not doing enough. It's like, you're just going to burn out and achieve nothing.
Yeah.
You know? And like, also, I think there's like an element of neurodiversity to that as well, where it's like, you actually, even though you could operate at 100% all the time, the more viable thing is to operate at 50%, 75%, because it'll let you work longer and forever and over the long run serve your community more, you know? And so, like, on an airplane, put your mask on before you help others, you know? And you gotta, because when you're dead, you cannot help the child put the mask on who's sitting next to you.
I got the imagine if I kill a child, my God.
Well, no, don't kill the child by putting on your mask first.
So totally. Yeah.
You know, like, take the 10 seconds to put the mask on.
Yeah.
Because the child can suffocate for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Be fast with the mask, but make sure you do it well. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't like this
metaphor
anymore.
Anyways, everybody wear masks. Yeah.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I do. I do know what I mean. I think I will always, like, feel that guilt to a certain extent. It is a motivator also for me. Toxic, yeah.
Yeah. But at least you know.
Aware. Talks about aware. Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like, So what? You're just going to spend your whole life going to protests and then go home and just think about protests and activism and all that. But it's like, when will you ever relax and slow down and think about anything else? You'll just get burnt out and give up and hold resentment towards the people you're trying to help unless you look after yourself, you know?
Yeah. Feeling that guilt of like relaxing. And I think this is, you know, even like when it comes to like fashion, when like you're thinking about like putting an outfit together in the name of like liberation and standing for your politics sometimes can feel like meaningless. And I know I just went on a full rant about how it's not, but you know, it definitely seeps in.
Yeah.
But I guess this is a good reminder that it's balance and it's all necessary for the greater good.
Yeah. And I mean, visibility matters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, do I feel more safe when I see someone with like lime green hair? Yeah.
Totally.
Keep wearing your lime green hair, folks.
Yeah. Everyone, petition. Everyone. This is your call to action today. Don't dye your hair.
We're lucky to live in somewhere where we can show, where we can wear most of our identities publicly. Mm-hmm. Let's take advantage of that. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's care for each other. And sometimes caring for each other is showing each other that we're not alone. So let's wear our keffiyehs and our lime green hair. And our Clothing Like Apps t-shirts and not our sook pants, because did you hear that, T?
Yeah. We're canceling sook, so don't wear that again.
I know, but then they just dropped new canvas, and I'm like, God, I wish you had done a better apology at least.
Yeah, God.
Anyhow.
Anyways, wear what you want. I don't know, but be intentional.
And look after yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like expressing yourself through clothing is one way of looking after yourself. You know, like you feel a little stronger. It's like putting on armor, you know? Before we wrap up, I do just want to share that I have included two links to other Substacks that I like on fashion and clothing, which we didn't get to talk to. But one of them is really interesting from the Molehill, which talks about Israeli soldiers in Gaza stealing clothes and looting clothes as memorabilia and sort of the history of that. And also just a really interesting article about dressing modestly, and has some nice brands to buy from if you want to dress modestly.
Yeah, totally.
What's your biggest regret for the past week?
So, I am notorious for booking ClassPass like workout classes and then just like not going to them. So I have to pay like $11 every time that I cancel them. But I like the the thought is there at the start, right? And so I did that 3 times in the past week. I don't have an income right now. I don't know what I'm doing. So that was basically my biggest regret. But then this morning I said, hey, I'm gonna do it. And I went to a 7 a.m. Pilates class. So regrets to two things is my moral of the story. What's yours?
I got home early last night and I was like, wow, 10 p.m.? I have nothing left to do for the night. I was like, I could go to bed right now. Spent 4 hours on Threads.
On Threads is crazy. I'm like, there are so many other platforms that you can use and you chose Threads. Anyways, thanks for listening.
This has been Broadly Relevant. We'd love if you could tell a friend.
Or leave a review. Love you.
Ciao.